Welcome back to Respect the Dead, the podcast where we don't.
Betty, it's no surprise that everyone celebrated your demise, and now worms are eating your eyes. So don't you worry your rotting head as you sleep in your sodden bed. It's time to respect.
Hi everyone, my name's Hoots.
My name's Mainly Mandy.
And I'm Kaelin Conrad.
And this is Respect the Dead. So today we are following up Mandy's Thomas Edison episode with one of Edison's contemporaries and besties, Henry Ford. So I think I mentioned in the last episode that I grew up in the town where Thomas Edison had his winter estate.
Mm-hmm. You did.
He was neighbors and best friends with Henry Ford, who also had his winter estate there, and Harvey Firestone, not to be confused with Harvey Firestein, who is an icon.
I was immediately hearing his voice.
Harvey Firestone was the tire magnate. And in Fort Myers, where I grew up, they referred to them as the three famous friends because they were all like neighbors and best friends. They all had their winter homes down there. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, they all sucked. I don't know a ton about Harvey Firestone, but today we're digging into Henry Ford, who certainly sucked.
I like how digging into him is like, if you actually picture it, knowing that he's a corpse, it's extra gross. It's like, we're just really digging in.
Digging in.
Just digging in with a shovel.
He's like all squishy and he smells weird and his eyes are jelly.
And it's there's like worms coming out of his eyes.
They're coming up and greeting us like, hello.
I like your podcast.
I love the idea of worms liking our podcast. They're like,
it's such good representation. I literally do be eating eyes.
We like the worm inclusion. Sensitivity of your podcast. Thank you for thinking of us. No one ever does.
Worm representation matters.
Yes.
So Henry Ford was born on July 30th, 1863 in Springwells Township, Michigan, to William Ford, who I put in my notes was an Irish immigrant of English descent, because I felt like that was like relevant. Apparently his family emigrated to from England to County Cork in the 17th century. So I was like kind of sus that they were like English people who came to Ireland in the 17th century. I think they were probably colonizers. But his father was an Irish immigrant. His mother, Mary Littlegott Ford, was the daughter of Belgian immigrants. And as a teen, he apprenticed to a machinist in Detroit. So he was like working on machinery. Mm-hmm. And in 1891, at the age of 28, he got a job as an engineer at the Edison Illumination Company of Detroit.
Hey, I know that name.
So he worked for Edison, where he was very quickly promoted to chief engineer, like within a couple of years. And as chief engineer, he had the money and time to devote himself to experiments with gasoline engines. So he was like genuinely a very a brilliant engineer. Mm-hmm. And by 1896, he'd invented a machine that could be propelled using gasoline, using a gasoline engine called the Ford Quadricycle. And I'm going to post a link to it in the chat. You've probably seen it before. I'm going to show you what it looks like.
Yes, I need to see this.
It's like a precursor to the car.
These images, anything we discuss will be on the on an Instagram post for this episode.
Yes, it will. Oh, look at it.
Oh my God, I love
it's
it.
It's so cute.
Isn't it? Do you recognize it?
This is adorable. Like, I don't know her, but I love her.
I've seen it before.
Yeah.
I definitely have seen that image sometimes, before or something similar.
Yeah, sometimes if you're seeing like old Nickelodeons or like movies that are set back in the 19th century, they'll show you like the Ford Quadricycle. Mm-hmm. It was like a precursor to the car,
yeah,
which is like what Ford Ford was like working toward is inventing the car.
Right. And so Ford, like he, yeah. And he was an actual like inventor in the sense that he actually like worked on this stuff. He wasn't just building off of, he wasn't stealing from people like Edison was. Okay.
He was like Edison in that he was like an entrepreneur and a capitalist. Yeah. And in his, in the bulk of his career, he was just like overseeing things, but Ford actually was an engineer.
Okay.
And he was quite brilliant.
Okay.
So it was around the same time that he created the quadricycle that Ford first met his boss and future bestie, Thomas Edison. Mm-hmm. He was like just basically introduced to him at a meeting in 1896. Henry Ford's goal, again, like I said, was to build a high quality automobile, but he also wanted to build one that was affordable enough for mass consumption by the public, not just like to be used as a wealthy person's novelty item. So he kind of like, he really was like, oh, we could actually use this as like our mode of transportation in the future. So he bounced around a bit, creating early automobiles first for the Edison-backed and short-lived Detroit Automobile Company, and then at the Henry Ford Company, which confusingly was later renamed Cadillac Automobile Company, before founding the Ford Motor Company that we know and I guess a love no. today. I don't know, like that we're familiar with today. I mean, I've never owned a Ford. Currently, I have an Italian car that, to be fair, sucks. but like, I've never owned an American car. I'm quite partial to Toyotas, actually. So the Ford Motor Company was founded in 1903. Ford Motors really popped off with the Model T, which was invented in 1908 and was relatively cheap, very inexpensive, and easy to fix if it broke down, and was produced kind of en masse. And by the 1920s, accounted for half of all the cars in the U.S. And the Ford Motor Company was most notable for also implementing the very first assembly line in 1913. Yeah. So this is like what really makes him like a big deal is he's the first person to put together a car assembly line.
Yeah.
And that reduced car building time from about 12 and a half hours per car to 93 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Holy shit.
That is a difference.
Yeah. So significant.
And I would assume all those extra profits and all that time back was passed directly down to the people making the cars?
Nope. Oh. Absolutely not.
Okay. Silly Kaylin. That's not how capitalism works.
We're going to get to that. But I mean, like 12 and a half hours to 93 minutes is like
a
significant reduction in time. By the early 20s, they were literally producing like 10,000 Model Ts a day,
damn,
which isn't like anything compared to what we have now, but like compared to like what they have. I mean, you could only make two cars in a day before.
Right.
So the car assembly line allowed the company to mass produce Model Ts, which first dramatically reduced their price, so there was more demand for them, and then profits soared because so many more people were buying them. But it also made the job of assembling cars suddenly much more like monotonous and less fulfilling for factory workers. Like before, these were like craftsmen who were building these cars,
and you need like less like complete skill sets, even.
Yeah.
Like you just needed to know how to do one tiny piece.
You stopped being an engineer and a craftsman and you started being just a factory worker.
Yeah.
So employee turnover at the Ford Motor Company just skyrocketed to as much as 370%. And as a result of this, Ford became a devotee of welfare capitalism, which he expressed. Yeah, that's what we have a lot of in the U.S. today, where, major corporations create lots of benefits and bonuses, including things like healthcare and dental, in order to encourage employees to remain with them.
Innovator of that, or was that like a thing at the time? Do you know?
That was a thing at the time. Yeah. He wasn't the first person to adopt it in the way that he was with assembly lines, but he was an early devotee of it. And it was like a thing both in the US and in Europe.
Okay. Gotcha.
But his was expressed mostly through a massive wage hike to reduce turnover and increase employee loyalty. So in 1914, the Ford Motor Company announced an initiative to double factory worker pay to about $5 a day, which was around $139 to $146 in today's money, depending on your source. So like not bad for like a factory worker.
Yeah.
However, and I'm going to quote a write-up from history.com, while $5 a day was a generous factory wage at the time, it came with a substantial catch. Technically, workers' pay remained less than or near $2.50 a day, and the extra money was a bonus they had to earn. Mm. The year Ford introduced the bonus, he established a company sociological department that sent inspectors to the homes of his employees, at this point mostly male immigrants, to make sure they were living in a way Ford approved of. Workers were denied the full $5 a day if their wives worked outside the home, if their homes were unclean, if they displayed signs of drinking or gambling, if they took in boarders, or if they didn't contribute to a savings account. This desire to control his workers and his belief that he could, quote, improve them would become characteristic of Ford's management style.
What the literal fuck? Number one, I would I would be paying him $5 an hour after he saw my home.
I need you to understand that this whole time that Hoots was saying all of that, Galen and I could not have looked more horrified and angry because we were just like, excuse you? You're going to tell me what? No, my home has nothing to do with you. Get out of here.
I mean, no one in this chat window right now would be making $5 a day.
No.
I'd be like, you're coming over to my home? All of us filthy degenerates.
Like, no, thank you. I'll go work putting buttons on a shirt for 8 hours instead. Thanks.
Like, okay, daddy, you aren't going to give me enough allowance because my room is messy and my wife had to get a job you're only paying me $2.50 an hour.
It really reflects that kind of like weirdly, like almost paternalistic kind of, I don't know, persona that some of these capitalists like hold on to. Where they're like, oh, I'm doing this for you, my employees, my team, my cast members. Like, it's just so creepy and weird to be like, I'm helping to improve your lives by coming to your house and telling your wife to stay in the kitchen and clean it more. Like, what the fuck?
I love that you use the term paternalistic because one of the other terms for welfare capitalism is industrial paternalism.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's exactly that.
Yep. It's exactly, yeah. It's so gross. Fucking capitalist daddy, get out of here.
He looks like Voldemort with a nose.
Oh, he looks so scary. Oh. He's very frightening.
He looks like a murderer. He looks like
he literally looks like a snake person.
I mean, Thomas Edison is no looker, but at least he looks friendlier than Henry Ford, who looks exactly as evil as he was.
Thomas Edison looks like a person made by people.
Person made by people.
Henry Ford is like very far removed.
If you enter old Voldemort into like one of those AI generators, you get Henry Ford.
I'm going to like, gonna go to like Bali or whatever the fuck it's called and like type in like Ford, like possible anti-Semitism or something. And I would get a photo of him.
So the history article continues. In 1913, he established an English school for workers because he thought the company would be safer and more efficient if everyone spoke the same language. But also because he believed immigrants should abandon their own languages and cultural practices,
of course,
according says Matt Anderson, curator of transportation at the Henry Ford Museum. According to Reverend Samuel Marquis, the Episcopalian minister Ford hired to run the company's sociological department, attendance was compulsory, and a worker who hesitated was, quote, laid off and given a chance for uninterrupted mediation and reconsideration. We seldom fail to change his mind.
Yeah, because he had just gotten fucking fired temporarily agreed to go to fucking English school.
Yeah, and then they'd be like, fuck, I need to make money. I guess I'm going to English school.
Oh my fucking God.
Right, because like what choice do you have? You especially the kind of wages they were offering. It's like you can really feed your family with that, maybe make a little progress in your own life. Like, yeah, that's hard to walk away from. So of course you're like, fine, I'll go to the stupid English school and learn this dumb
conform
language.
Conform or starve.
Yeah. Jesus. Okay,
this was, to me, this was the darkest thing. So the English school's graduation ceremonies made graduates dress in stereotypical costumes of their cultures of origin and approach a stage on which there was a huge melting pot.
Oh, no.
And graduates would walk behind the melting pot, change clothes, and emerge from behind the pot wearing a suit and tie to symbolize becoming American.
This is like a high school Thanksgiving play. I'm like, this is the worst thing I've ever heard.
Oh my
god. This
is
so disgusting. It's so ugly.
It's so dark.
What an ugly fucking man.
That's so gross to make a person do. Like, hi, not only do you have to learn this language, because if not, we will literally not pay you to do this job, but also you have to stand in front of a bunch of people in your native dress, walk behind a thing, and then be dressed as a, quote, proper American. It just... Wow.
Is it actually their native dress, or did they provide the outfit?
Oh, yeah, there's that question, too.
The article called them stereotypical costumes, so I'm sure they were either provided or requested to source stereotypical versions of what they would wear.
It was the Party City.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
Party City version.
Probably. I mean, this is around the time that my mom's family came to the U.S., and they would have just worn, like, you know, a cotton shirt and a cotton pair of trousers or a skirt at the time. Mm-hmm. So this would be like making them dress in like a traditional like Finnish dress with like a fucking hat, making them look like a fucking elf or something.
Right.
And then having them
really
change into to play it up.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these immigrants were like from like Germany or from like Slovakia or that kind of thing. So again, it'd be like people from Europe who came over wearing like cotton outfits, but then they'd be like, right, can you go find like whatever your people wear, and then we want you to
weirder,
we want you to symbolically then like become homogenized.
They're like oh, sorry, I actually forgot my special outfit, can I still graduate? They're like, don't worry, we have like several windmill costumes in the back that you can put on.
We've got these wooden shoes.
Like the equivalent today would be like someone wearing like a really over the top stereotypical costume from like a Halloween store, walking behind the thing and then coming out wearing like khakis and a button down shirt. Be like, hello, you're now American. Congratulations. Like,
if your exchange student from Germany, you are like, can you get some lederhosen maybe? And they're like, I've never even seen lederhosen in my life. Mm-hmm. And then you make them change into like a hoodie and jeans to show that they become Americanized. It's fucking disgusting.
Oh my god.
Look how normal and happy you are now.
It's so dark.
It's so fucked up.
It's so dark. Because it's just like, can you please symbolically represent how you're losing everything about your identity to fit in with the crowd? Yeah. It's fucked up.
It's so fucked up.
So by the 1920s, a lot of Black Americans had moved to Michigan as part of the Great Migration, which was like the mass relocation of Black Americans from the rural South to other parts of the U.S. following the Reconstruction and early Jim Crow eras. There were like many mass waves of Black people getting the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah.
believe it or not, Henry Ford paid Black factory workers the same as white factory workers for the same jobs.
Oh.
So he kind of got like a reputation of being like more progressive than he actually was, because Black workers were not eligible to rise to certain positions because Ford believed that they were genetically inferior. And so most of them continued working for lower wages in the foundry and the forge at the Dearborn, Michigan factory.
Of course.
Of course.
He got a reputation for being...
And he still gets to control their lives. Like, he still gets...
Totally. Like, also, it's notable that, like, they continued working at the foundry and the forge, which are, like, the lowest paid and most dangerous positions.
Yeah,
that,
of course.
Yes, like, other white factory workers would start there, too, working the same, making the same wages as the Black workers. Yeah. But then they would be allowed to rise among the ranks, whereas it's like, well, I don't think you're ready for it for the Black people. So he got, like, an unearned reputation of being, like, a woke king for paying more than, like, other factories in the area were paying Black people, which is like a a significant thing to note too, because if they went to another factory, they would be paid less than their white counterparts. Yeah. So like Ford was the best they could get.
And it was still shitty. It was the best they could get and it still sucked.
And it was still shitty and they would stay there. And you can imagine that he probably had his own reasons for wanting to offer them, like he could offer them that kind of money, and then he would constantly have a workforce with low turnover.
Yeah,
you know, that'll stay in those shitty areas.
And then the fact that he had all those the requirements about, like, if you want to get bonuses or whatever, you have to have like a clean house and all this other stuff. Like, how many? I mean, I can't speak from like innate knowledge here or anything, but like how many black households could afford to only have one, just the husband working, you know what I mean? Like how many women were also probably working too?
Women of color have always had to go work.
So like
nannies and housekeepers.
I can't imagine that the women were,
and
women were out working too. Yeah.
Very often. Like, I mean, he had his prohibition of borders and things as well. And it's like, well, how many black households had like cousins that would come live with them?
Right.
And would he count those as borders or as immediate family? Yeah. Like, because again, like, these were people who were leaving the South in mass waves to get away from the racism down there to get to the less bad racism of the North and the West.
The passive aggressive racism.
I doubt many of them actually made that $5 a day. Yeah. They probably made $2.50 a day.
Yeah,
whereas
probably,
you know, other factories, they would have made less than a dollar.
But you can also say that that's just on them for not being moral enough to like get $5. That's, you can do it if you want.
That's what he would have said. You pull yourself up by your bootstraps,
get comfortable in your khakis and just be a normal person, obviously, and then you'll be fine.
Really?
That's how that works. By your boy boss straps.
Your boy boss straps.
So Ford was, quite unsurprisingly, staunchly anti-union.
No.
Most welfare capitalists are, because unions threaten that whole idea of industrial paternalism, they give people more autonomy. And he took to surveilling his employees and engaging them with violence in order to quash any threats of unionization. So in 1932, Ford's private police force, known as the Ford Service Department, and the normal police, in combination with the normal police, ACAB, tear gassed, fire hosed, and opened fire on unemployed auto workers marching for the right to organize during the Great Depression, killing 5 of them and wounding 60.
Jesus.
So like during the Great Depression, some unemployed auto workers started marching, doing a peaceful protest in Michigan for the right to organize. And the cops and Ford's fucking private police force murdered 5 of them. In 1937.
They're just random citizens. They're not employed by
him. They're not his employees.
They're starving during the Great Depression.
I mean, not like it's okay to I'm not saying it's okay to murder your employees, but like, who the fuck are you? Like, it's just like such a like purely selfish thing. It's not like, get back to work. It's like, you'll never work again.
Yeah, it's gonna kill you. So fucking unnecessary. Like, dude, what the hell?
And I mean, again, at any point in history, they should be able to march for their right to organize. But like, it's especially egregious during the Great Depression.
Yeah, when there's mass unemployment everywhere, everyone's starving. Exactly. Yeah, no, for sure. It's just especially a bad look.
Yeah,
this is a bad look.
If any time to allow people to be like, hey, we need to be able to advocate for ourselves, it's during the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So in 1937, the United Auto Workers Union organized a series of peaceful sit-down protests for higher wages, shorter hours, and improved worker conditions. And those are exactly what they sound like. There would be like a certain hour of the day where they tell union members like working at these various factories, like, hey, you're going to sit down and refuse to work. Mm-hmm. So they successfully organized at Chrysler and General Motors. But when they set their sights on Ford Motors, the Ford Service Department, that private police force that was made up of quote, ex-convicts, ex-athletes, ex-cops, and gang members, according to a write-up in the Smithsonian, showed up.
I like that the gang members weren't exes. they were the one people. No, we're still gang
current
members.
Gang members. I mean, the Ford Service Department was basically a gang.
I mean, it was. Yeah.
They showed up and just beat the shit out of them. It was known as the Battle of the Overpass and ended with a union organizer being thrown off of an overpass by Ford's private police, breaking the man's back.
Jesus.
The private police also beat up a bunch of women who were part of the UAW auxiliary, which I think just means that they were there to support loved ones in the union.
Look at that supportive wife over there. Get her.
Yeah, like, beat the shit out of her.
Oh my fucking God. I mean, I'm not surprised, but like,
because this was 1937.
I know that that's like something the cops always do, but like, I know that a lot of the police forces and like independent police forces were literally just created to fuck with unions and shit.
Yeah.
But like just the thought of someone being thrown over a fucking overpass is like so like at what point are you like, oh no, I was definitely protecting the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By throwing this person off an overpass.
That was necessary.
Throwing this man over an overpass and then going and punching his wife.
Like, yes, great. This is how we protect America. Yeah.
So that was 1937. So that would have been 2 years before the Second World War. Again, none of those factory workers were women just yet. But speaking of the Second World War, Henry Ford maintained a pacifist position in both world wars, but not for the reasons you might think someone might be anti-war. Mm. Ford wanted the U.S. to remain neutral because he believed that both world wars were an international conspiracy orchestrated by the Jews.
Oh, there it is. There it is. Oh. I'm like, this is going to get real bad eventually. There it is.
Yeah.
Of God damn course. It.
So Ford was a lifelong anti-Semite, so committed to the cause that in 1918 he bought a struggling local paper, the Dearborn Independent, and turned it into his own personal Jew-hating zine. In 1920, he started publishing a weekly series called The International Jew, The World's Problem, based on the Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
Wow.
Are you guys familiar with the Protocols of the Elders of Zion?
I've never heard of it.
A little.
Okay. So for both of you and for our listeners, this is kind of sadly an important document. The Protocols of the Elders of Zion was a hoax document created by a member of the Russian secret police around the turn of the 20th century. So like while Nicholas II was in power and Anastasia was alive and all that shit. Mm-hmm. It's like where the whole anti-Semitic conspiracy about Jewish world domination comes from. Mm. And it's either directly or indirectly to blame for pretty much every pogrom that's occurred from the early 20th century to today. So the protocols were claimed to be the top secret records of a meeting of Zionist leaders in Basel, Switzerland in 1897, during which a conspiracy was launched for a socialist Jewish-led takeover of the financial, cultural and government levers of power. But it was just, it was completely a hoax. Yeah. And it was like, it was debunked like very early on. It was debunked in the early 1920s, a London magazine. I'll look that up. Future Amanda, look that up.
Future Hoots.
Future Hoots.
Hey, this is Future Hoots here. And the magazine I was thinking of was The Times. So The Times exposed the Protocols of the Elders of Zion as a forgery all the way back in 1921. And it was actually their Constantinople reporter, an Anglo-Irish man named Philip Graves, who discovered that the vast majority of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion were actually plagiarized from an obscure French political satire, like an obscure satirical poem about Napoleon. So that's weird, right? What the fuck?
So the The hoax was pieced together from a variety of unrelated sources, including an anti-Semitic German novel and a French piece of satire. There was just like a satire of Napoleon III. It didn't even mention Jewish people in it.
Hey, this is Future Hoots again. So apparently I mentioned the French poem thing and some other stuff. Apparently I did do my due diligence while I was researching this episode, but we record so many weeks in advance, and I'm gonna be honest, I am blackout drunk every single time, so I completely forgot about the French poem thing.
Oh my God.
They changed a few names. So in his International Jew series, Ford blamed the Jews for everything from labor unions to short skirts to jazz music, which he called Yiddish moron music.
He's legitimately such a patty little man.
He's just like an angry old man yells at cloud.
Oh my God.
So he was like the first Alex Jones.
Totally.
Just screaming about the most random shit.
I love that, like, he's like mad about short skirts and he's like, it must be the Jews.
Must be the Jews.
Like if you were to look at like any like traditional Jewish dresses or skirts, I don't think they would be super skimpy. No. like you're not seeing like many down like Hasidic ankles. Jews in like mini skirts.
No, yeah, like I mean, I'm not exactly familiar with all of the history of Jewish fashion, but I can't ever say I've ever been like, oh yeah, short skirts make me immediately think of.
And I mean, like
Jewish people, like that's just a
definitely
random
not more
fucking
than
thing.
Like any other. Like when I think short skirts, I think like Roman men.
Right. No, exactly. Like
yeah. I think he was just like, he was an old man who was mad and like anything he was mad at, he wanted to blame on the Jews.
He was just mad.
It was like the original. He
was stub my toe. Must have been the Jews. just angry about
that
anything.
That meme with like a guy riding a bike and then he puts his stick in the wheel and then he falls down.
Yeah. Henry Ford. The Jews did this.
It's like, Henry Ford. According to a write-up in the Washington Post, he also apparently called Prohibition-era whiskey N-word gin.
Ugh,
oh
so
my
gross.
Fucking
which he also,
God.
I think, blamed on Jewish people. I haven't read any of The International Jew, obviously, but according to Wikipedia, there was an article in the series. I don't.
You're not subscribed to a Substack.
There's an article in the series titled Gigantic Jewish Liquor Trust and Its Career. So I think he blamed whiskey. The bad
word whiskey.
Anagram of ginger gin.
Oh my God. What a
he blamed that on the Jews too.
This reminds me of that there's a clip from some, I think it's like a UK show where the guy's in the car and he says something about like, you know, the car's not working and he's like, ah, this is because of the Jews. And then the other guy that's in the car is like, what's going on? What are you talking about? What parts in this car are Jewish? And he just starts like randomly pointing at things. And he's just like, yeah, this is a Jewish conspiracy to keep me from getting somewhere. I don't know. It's really wild and silly. It has that same vibe of just
that's
like,
kind of
just
yeah.
make shit up and then see if it sticks to the wall.
Like,
that's all anti-Semitic conspiracies.
I mean, that's all any of these stereotypes.
He's his
any
own
of those
Alex
kind of,
Jones,
yeah.
though. Like, he's just...
I'm pretty sure Alex Jones has pulled from the Protocols of the Elders of Zion as well. Like,
oh, I'm sure.
It's like one
sure.
of... That and the Turner Diaries are like the two most... We gotta do a special series on like dead literature or something and talk shit about these bad books.
Yes.
Ford published his hate rag in the Dearborn Independent for literal years, and he extended its reach by also distributing it in Ford dealerships throughout the country.
No.
So
imagine
like,
going to buy a car and you get this guy's shitty zine. The shitty anti-Semitic zine. That's like if anything in the car breaks. It's the Jews' fault.
Like, oh God, this shitty anti-Semitic zine. It's like buying a car in Portland, Oregon.
Oh,
okay.
No.
So Henry Ford is the only American praised by Adolf Hitler by name in his 1925 manifesto Mein Kampf. Quote, "It is Jews who govern the stock exchange forces of the American Union. Every year makes them more and more the controlling masters of the producers in a nation of 120 millions. Only a single great man, Ford, to their fury, still maintains full independence."
When you get a shout out from literal Hitler,
from literal
maybe,
Hitler,
maybe it's time to like take a step back off a cliff. Like there's like
that's one of those moments where you hope they self-reflect and go, "Are we the baddies? Like maybe I've done something wrong with my life." If Adolf Hitler is endorsing me.
Like has like a blurb on the front of your book. Like a showstopper, couldn't put it down.
Loved every second, Adolf Hitler.
I've got good news, Mandy. He did not.
Okay. I'm not surprised.
However, 2 years later in 1927, Ford was sued for libel by a Jewish business owner because of his shitty paper.
Good.
The suit ended in a mistrial, but Ford did issue a public apology and retracted some of his anti-Semitic comments, blaming his underlings at the paper to avoid responsibility.
I half expected that sentence to end blaming the Jews themselves and moving on. It's not my fault.
It was those self-hating Jews interns that I hired.
Yeah, right.
Blaming interns is really just a time-honored tradition.
They didn't send me the memo that it wasn't.
So after that, he at least showed like a little bit of caution. He was all like, "I misspoke when I wrote about international Jews. I'm actually just mad about international bankers, you guys. It's totally a different thing."
Did he change the name
to International Bankers
of the magazine?
No.
Did he?
No, he just stopped.
Okay.
So the newspaper was called the Dearborn Independent. The series was called the International Jew. So he did stop publishing the International Jew.
But, okay.
In further op-eds in his newspaper, he called them International Bankers,
okay,
which is totally different.
And thank God that never
like
was
dogs
something that
all
used...
around the world are like whining and lifting their ears into the air.
Bark, 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 bark. So Hitler was at this point just a huge fan of Henry Ford, and pamphlets of Ford's The International Jew circled Europe, published in 4 volumes by a member of the Reichstag.
Oh,
a Detroit newspaper reported in 1931 that Hitler regarded Ford as his inspiration. Hitler kept a life-sized portrait of Henry Ford next to his desk and stated ominously, "I shall do my best to put his theories into practice in Germany."
What?
Oh my God.
Both of your mouths are just like gaping.
Hitler's daddy?
Yeah. Hitler was the biggest Henry Ford fanboy. He was like, and this is so funny because like Walt Disney gets this reputation, mm-hmm, and like we will cover Walt Disney one day.
I will.
But like with Walt Disney stuff, it's much more tenuous. Like it's much like there, maybe he was a fan, but maybe he like just saw a couple of the cartoons. Hitler like unequivocally was like, I've got a hard on for Henry Ford.
No, not this like Third Reich BFF boy boss. Like, oh my God, no.
I just would like to suggest that
on
the title
desk
of this podcast episode should be Henry Ford and then the parentheses or whatever, Hitler's daddy.
Oh, Hitler.
That was just too good.
Ooh, love you, Henry Ford, son.
Oh, no.
It's so gross. Like, imagine being the person who inspired Hitler. Like, he's on his little Pinterest board. I'm Hitler's
Hitler
Pinterest
was
board.
Like, now that is an anti-Semite.
No.
Living up to you, King, every day.
Do it for Henry.
I just spit back into my drink. Oh my God. Okay.
So
Henry,
the first Volkswagen was actually based on the Ford Model T as well. you know how like Volkswagen was like a Third Reich enterprise.
Yeah.
The very first Volkswagen was heavily based on Ford's Model T. Mm-hmm. And in 1938, just over a year before the outbreak of World War II, Henry Ford was presented with the Grand Cross of the Supreme Order of the German Eagle, the highest honor bestowed upon foreigners by Nazi Germany for his 75th birthday. And here is a photo of him receiving it.
Oh my God.
He looks so happy.
He's like, I'm so proud of my daddy son.
My daddy son
is insane.
What a piece of fucking shit.
It's like, I'm gonna put this on my special.
Oh God. He's like, why, yes, I am an anti-Semite. Thank you for this honor. So Ford Motors would continue. They would continue to collaborate with the Nazis until 1942, a year after the United States entered the war, manufacturing jeeps, trucks, and tanks for the Axis war machine. And to this day, the Ford Motor Company insists that they had no control over their German subsidiaries.
But okay.
Like, okay, bro.
Okay.
The Nazis loved your guy.
Okay. You would think that the American government would use the fact that they're collaborating with the Nazis as an excuse to like steal their company from them or something, at least, right? Like, mm-mm. Like, that's a pretty good reason to stop them and obtain their company and all of their assets. Like,
well, I think the problem was, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong about this, Hoots, but I think there were a lot of American like businessmen who had like invested interests in like, certain top-ranking German industries and such. So basically, it would have screwed them over, I think, in the process somehow, I think, is how that would have worked. Like, if the U.S. government had taken over, they would have gotten screwed and lost money. So, of course, we can't do that. And they probably lobbied very hard against that. We didn't touch them.
Ford was not the only U.S. company that was collaborating with the Nazis.
Oh, yeah,
and not even the U.S., the only U.S. auto company, like GM did as well.
they was a bunch,
Like well into like the 90s and 2000s, there were still like court cases trying to untangle how much the Swiss banks were involved in collaborating with the Nazis. Like, there were so many, basically every rich person in the Western world was collaborating with the Nazis. And world governments were just happy to look the other way.
Nobody would remain in power if they pissed off the rich people. Yeah. Okay.
So Hitler, of course, wasn't the only Nazi fanboy of Henry Ford. In a letter written in 1924, Heinrich Himmler described Ford as, quote, one of our most valuable, important, and witty fighters. Oh, he's witty.
He's not witty.
He's so funny.
No. His aunt's so funny and smart.
Daddy, you're so funny. Hitler, Daddy, you're so funny and smart.
Car Daddy, tell me some more anti-Semitic jokes, please.
Ford is so witty. And at the Nuremberg trials in 1946, a youth leader, I wrote Withing. That's wrong. I think he was a youth leader of the National Socialist German Students League named Balder von Schirach, which is a very funny name. Balder von Schirach. He described being radicalized by the writings of Henry Ford. Quote, the decisive anti-Semitic book, which I read at the time, and the book which influenced my comrades was Henry Ford's book, The International Jew. Because in Europe, it was published as 4 volumes as a book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In those days, this book made such a deep impression on my friends and myself because we saw in Henry Ford the representative of success. In the poverty-stricken and wretched Germany of the time, youth looked toward America, and apart from the great benefactor Herbert Hoover, it was Henry Ford who, to us, represented America. And I like that quote because I think it does speak to like the seriousness of like having a platform and using that platform.
Yeah.
Like, he represented success to a bunch of downtrodden, very easily influenced children.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, be an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
And they were like, sure, let's do this.
It's the first and only book they've ever read. They have no Snopes to like check to see if it's all bullshit. He was not including fucking his sources.
Listen up, Elon Musk fans. So by the late 1920s, Henry Ford's son, Edsel Ford, had actually already assumed the nominal presidency of Ford Motors, going back a little bit. But in 1943, toward the end of the war, Edsel dies of cancer at the age of 49, and Henry Ford becomes president of the company again. But no one is really happy with it. And Henry Ford, who was like nearing 80 at the time and had had a series of strokes, was also mentally deteriorating quite a bit. So like around the time that like the world war is happening, and he's not proselytizing about anti-Semitism as much, but he's being awarded by the Nazis all of his shit. His little, like his old little fucking brain is like turning to mush in his skull. So in 1945, Ford's grandson, Henry Ford II, who was nicknamed Hank the Deuce.
Okay, I'm in.
Hank!
He ousts Ford.
Deuce, hey!
Hank the Deuce, baby! He ousts Ford and assumes control of Ford Motors. So Hank the Deuce also made sure to do some damage control as the president of the company by loudly supporting the American Jewish community and further developing the philanthropic charity his father and grandfather founded, the Ford Foundation. The Ford Foundation is pretty cool. Pretty cool. Their stated goal is advancing human welfare, and it pursues those goals through a series of grants and endowments given to various media, legal and civil rights, and arts and cultural projects. So fun fact about the Ford Foundation is a $1 million grant was given by them in 1969 to the Children's Television Workshop to help create and launch Sesame Street.
Oh, cool.
And they also,
that's so cool.
They were the ones that were like, hey, go do some research into childhood development and make a TV show. Mm-hmm. They also contributed millions of dollars of bonds in efforts to fight the AIDS epidemic in the late 80s about $1 billion in bonds to help nonprofits fight the COVID-19 pandemic. So they're a pretty cool organization. They were originally founded by Henry Ford I and Edsel Ford, but they weren't really, it wasn't like really developed into a big thing until Hank the Deuce kind of took over.
Okay.
Until Hank. Hank's our dude. We like
Hank the Deuce. Hank the Deuce isn't too bad.
Hank the Deuce.
I'm kind of in.
Yeah.
The real one.
So after being ousted from his own company by his grandson, Henry Ford lived for another 4 years before a cerebral hemorrhage took him down that long, toothy slide to hell on April 7th, 1947 at the age of 83. Rest in piss, shitbag.
Yes. Yes, long toothy slide to hell. We need to remember that for future episodes because that's great.
I am so glad he's done. Wow.
I knew a little bit about Henry Ford in just the general sense of like, oh yeah, he was like a Nazi collaborator. He was like a piece of shit. I didn't know that he was that like Hitler was his stan. Like Hitler was like his simp. Yeah, like what the fuck? Did not know that.
Simping
that
hard. Really threw me.
Simping so hard. Like he has him like, he has like a little altar in his house where he's looking up and like, today I'm going to make you proud.
I've never had a life-size portrait of someone in my life.
Wait, it was
life-size portrait of him sitting next to his desk. Absolutely. So he could wake up every day and make out with it.
I was just gonna say, I'm imagining Tiger Beat posters from forever, like the 90s with like the little hearts, and it's like, oh, I'm making out with Justin and now I'm making out with Henry Ford.
He's like, I'm going to have tea with Henry Ford and Walt Disney's this afternoon. How are you doing, boys? That's how I imagine talking to his two fucking portraits.
Locks the door.
If I don't come in, yes.
Don't come in. What are you
sock
doing?
On the door.
He's like covering him up. With like battle plans or something. Some stupid anti-Semitic shit. Like, I don't know.
Not battle plans. Like moves his like whiteboard with like a bunch of like maps with pins in them in front of it. Like nothing.
No,
it's nothing.
It's a final solution. What do you think I was doing?
Oh like, no. It only took like 10, 12 episodes or something for us to be doing like full
impressions. It happens. Everyone mark it on your calendars.
Ava Brown is like, please, babe, come have sex with me. I'm so horny. And he's like, oh, I love Henry Ford. I'm reading his zine.
Oh my God. Okay. The fact that he was like reading his zine and like subscribed to his OnlyFans is like,
he would have been his Patreon supporter for
top
sure.
Top tier.
Highest tier. Like doing this, like the special private like chats late at
night. You get the
one-on-one. Q&A's, like that kind of
for sure.
What's
the company where you can do a cameo? He would 100% get a cameo
every day, sending Henry Ford a cameo.
Yeah, of Henry Ford request. Just saying, "I'm proud of you, son."
Oh my God, this is a wild ride. Hoots. I feel like your last couple ones have just been really wild. It's amazing.
Bangers.
Good job.
These people suck.
They suck so hard.
And that's that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. I'm still reeling. Just anybody having a life-size poster of like anyone like is like a real human person.
As an
like,
adult not man. Like a, it's okay when you're 13. Yeah, like
as a life-size is still weird. Like like a full cutout. Full it's cutout. Like even the feet. It's like like just a big poster is one thing, but like it's like no, I need the feet there. And I need to be able to flip it around and see the back. I need Hitler's it double-sided. Like,
I definitely need the feet.
I'm going to need the feet.
I just imagine that he actually originally bought one and he was like, yes, excuse me, this is only 5'3". Henry Ford is actually 5'7". He had to like go get...
He was 5'10".
Or 5'10". Excuse me, 5'10".
I wanted to know if he was taller than Hitler.
Do they have his penis size?
I don't know how tall Hitler was.
How tall was Hitler?
I think he was 5'5". Hold on.
Oh, he was a little guy.
I
looked at
Henry I was taller Ford. Than him.
Okay, the second thing is Hitler height. 5'6".
Oh, yeah, he's a little guy.
Oh, no, hold on. Oh, I'm lying. He was 5'9".
Oh.
Or that's what was reported.
He might have lied about that.
I feel like he might have lied.
I mean, every guy that says he's 5'9".
Oh, 5'8". Here we go. On celeb height.
On
celeb height wiki.
Do you know what his income is? 5'8". Does it say?
Okay, so 5'8".
Net worth.
5'8" is the yeah. Okay, so 5'8" is the full.
I love those websites that are like Hitler height net worth. Who is he dating?
Hitler husband.
Hitler husband.
Henry Ford.
All right. Well, that's enough.
That's enough.
Goodbye, everyone.
Yeah, I think that's where it's like standing on.
Bye.
Bye, Hoots Dames.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Respect the Dead. You can follow Respect the Dead on Instagram and Twitter @_respectthedead.
If you want to follow us individually, you can find our socials in the show notes. And you should check out our YouTube channels. We don't shit on dead people there as often, but still, we're making tons of cool stuff.
If you enjoyed Respect the Dead and would like to support us, there's a couple of ways to do that.
You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you found us. Give us at least 5 stars and then share us with a good friend who likes venting about dead people.
You can also give us some money over on our Patreon. Patreon supporters get some cool bonus content like bloopers from the cutting room floor and even coming up with a fake sponsor ad that we'll read in an episode. It has to be a fake business though, not your MLM, honey.
Thanks so much for listening. Join us every Monday for our next Worm Feast.
I'm Kellen Conrad.
I'm Ailey Mandy.
And I'm Hoots. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.